Hey, it's Rob. It was an amazing week of Survivor, and we had incredible podcasts with Christian Hubicki and Steven on the Know-It-Alls. Make sure you catch those as well. Plus, The Circle was back this week with an AI contestant. Taryn, Mike Bloom, and Puya broke down the first week of drops from The Circle and on Renap. Who did Sam Moore find for the big guest? Find out on this week's Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa. I would say Island of Secrets, but really this is just some pretty general Survivor South Africa content and international Survivor content, which I'm just so happy to do. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, and I am here to talk to an amazing guest. This is a podcast that has been, I think, over a year in the making that we've been trying to get this person on the line. But before we do, please welcome my amazing co-host, someone I haven't talked Survivor with on a podcast in about just over 2 weeks. So that might be some sort of record for us, which is very sad lately. But please welcome Mike Bloom.
Shannon, I know this Lost reference is going to be lost on you, but I very much feel like the castaways in season five just constantly jumping between U.S., in South Africa. I did a little bit of Australia this weekend as well on the Dom and Colin podcast. So my mind is just traveling all around the world with Survivor, but I'm so happy to stop where we are today.
Yeah, I mean, in the 2.5 weeks since we've spoken, I watched all of Lost.
I honestly would not put it past you. So.
I didn't. I have a wedding to plan. Anyway, I'll guess. Let's get to that because I'm so excited to welcome Survivor South Africa's series director and creative producer. He is a huge super fan of the show and someone I've called the most valuable person in the international Survivor community, and I wholeheartedly stand by that. Please welcome the amazing LaRue Buta. LaRue, thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Mike and Shannon. Shannon, thank you for that introduction. Yeah, I'm the guy who never got to play Survivor SA season two, but I did produce two seasons of Survivor SA. So, and I'm so happy to talk to you too. It's really an honor and a privilege, and I'm really looking forward to our chat.
Yeah, see, like, this is like a perfect lesson to people who might not get on the first couple times. Some say keep applying. Others say start your own production company and produce Survivor on your own.
Absolutely. That's we'll get into that a little bit later, I think.
Yeah. I mean, this is better. I think like you don't have to starve. You get to be, you know, on the, you know, doing the show, but like in a, you know, actual hotel, I assume, with the rest of production, and you're actually creating the show. Like you definitely won.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And then you start working on the next season, like in the day that Final Tribal Council happens on the island, you start research and development on the next season. So that's the best job in the country, in the world.
Well, let's get into it, actually, speaking of next season, because I know that we obviously have a lot of stuff that we want to get into with not only your personal history with Survivor SA, but obviously a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes of a show we love so nearly and dearly to our own hearts. But when we asked for questions, by far and away, the plurality of the questions were about next season. Now, I think since Shannon and I got together last, there was a bit of a press release put out by Mnet about how Survivor South Africa was not going to be on the schedule for next year. I think that brought up a lot of concerns about cancellation of Survivor South Africa. I think after the cancellation of Survivor New Zealand, people have sort of become very wary and hopeful that, you know, the axe doesn't fall for the other beloved international Survivor seasons. I personally heard some conflicted reports when finding out a little bit more about how South African television works. So I feel like it's best to hear it, you know, straight from the horse's mouth here. So what is the word at the moment about Survivor South Africa season 8?
Well, Mike, just to kind of channel the great Josh Wigler and down the hatch, and how I feel about season 8 of Survivor South Africa is we have to go back.
Yes. I don't know how I could have beaten Rob telling me that Darrow loves me, but you might have just gotten in right there with a down the hatch reference, LaRue.
No, absolutely. I've been listening to you guys and really enjoying the show. But yes, so the official stance is that Survivor SA season 8 is not happening yet. Mnet is very happy with the ratings of the season and how it went. They say that it's not that they don't love it. They absolutely love it. But it is a question of the schedule lineup. And because Survivor is such an expensive show, they are looking at budgets and timelines and all of that. So if I can be as bold, I've been in development for soft R&D for season 8 since the final Tribal Council day. That's when I started working on season 8. But there is currently no final word from MNET if and when Survivor will be back. So unfortunately for viewers out there who have fallen in love with Survivor SA, we are not going to have one. I don't know in the foreseeable future.
What can we do? Like, what can we as a community, we have to be able to do something.
Look, if anybody's out there and an angel investor who really loves the show, they can get in contact with me and we can try and make it work. And but it is a budget thing. It is a timeline thing for Inet as well. So there's not much we can currently do. Just kind of send out hopes and prayers and, you know, cross fingers and toes. So unfortunately, that is the status of season 8.
But, you know, the international community, I think, as Mike said, is like pretty pessimistic. You know, we've been hurt before with Survivor New Zealand. And I think there's a lot of like, it's done and it's canceled. And that's not true. Like, you're in development. Like, there is hope. Like, it's not as dire, I don't think, right, as the community thinks it is.
Shannon, absolutely. It's not as dire as the community thinks. So in its official stance is that they love the show and that the show did really well. At the finale, at the press conference at the finale, they did mention that the ratings for this season versus season 6 was pushed up by 50%, which is great because season 6 in that time slot pushed the viewership up by 71%. So the increase was incredible. The current state of Survivor season 8, Survivor SA season 8, is sitting on, it is not, it's not cancelled. It's shelved for the moment. But as I said, I'm in full development mode. We are looking at a season that is going to really blow the community's minds if I get my way.
Yeah, I mean, I'm choosing to be optimistic. I think that the official hashtag for this podcast should be hashtag when not if, because that's how I look at it. Like, it's going to happen.
When not if.
We just got to get the scheduling. I understand TV is a difficult thing. We're going to work it out with the scheduling, with the budget. I get it. But it's happening because, you know, we're going to Rob Bentley it. That's what I think I've taken from like the Rob deep dive. He was like, I just knew I was going to win. I'm trying to like put that into my daily life now.
Yeah, you have to manifest it. And look, LaRue, if push comes to shove, I think Shannon and I can both extend. You can come film the next Survivor season in Australia or in New Jersey. Really, either exotic location would be happy to host the next Survivor SA.
To be quite honest, as part of the soft R&D that I'm doing now, I'm looking at
New Jersey?
No, not New Jersey. I'm also not considering Australia, but we are looking at a very, very cool new location to shoot Survivor Season 8 in, and it's going to happen. I'm the optimistic one. In our production company, I'm known as the ever optimistic dude who makes things happen, and I'll tell you the story about how we acquired the rights to Survivor a little later. But I'm the optimistic one, and I am all over this Rob Bentley manifesting it into existence. I had breakfast with Rob this morning, and I said to him, "I'm having a chat with you guys," and we kind of manifested that, you know, it's going to go well, and it's going to and season 8 is going to happen. So season 8 is going to happen. The question is not if, it's when.
Yeah, I mean, get Rob to go in and talk to Mnet and just get them to look into his eyes and have a season by next week, like, I can assure you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did Rob pay for breakfast or did he at least give you a ride?
No. Rob paid for breakfast. I offered to pay, and then he said, no, let me pay. And I kind of went, oh, wait, you won $1 million. yeah, you can pay. So Rob paid for breakfast. Yeah, it was cool.
Okay. So our position is it's going to happen, and we're not accepting anything less. Let's get into more fun stuff than this. So I think we really wanted to know, like, we want to hear about all of how you got to this position as a producer, but like, you're a fan and you have been a super fan of the show. I'd love to hear like your fan story, as Mike has always done on the B&B. Like, what is your Survivor fan story?
It starts with US Survivor airing in South Africa. Literally my husband and I watched it together. My husband, who is now who was my boyfriend at the time, who is the executive producer with me, Henry Basson.
Yeah, it's so amazing. You're like the biggest power couple ever, that you completely run Survivor South Africa between the two of you.
It's ridiculous. So Henry and I met in 2001, and in that same year US Survivor started, and I fell in love with the first episode. I know everybody says that, and I sometimes get it. Also, just think about, you know, everybody saying that, you know, Richard Hatch. That literally was where I fell in love with it. 2005, I think, Survivor SA Season 1 was cast. It was an open cast, but you had to fill in a form and send it off to Mnet, and then you were called back. And, you know, I was not in a great space at that time of my career. So I just started at a new job. The entry form was just wrong. It was a paper form, and you don't get the sense of who someone is on a paper entry form. Anyway, so the next season basically was cast directly after that. And in 2006, I applied for Survivor SA Season 2, and my entry form was placed in a denim shoulder bag together with a 3-minute video that I made, entry video, which was not required at the time. And I had a full size cardboard cutout made of myself. I went for a photo shoot in my Survivor outfit with my Season 1 buff that was on my arm. There's a picture of it on Instagram, on my Instagram feed. And that entry form was delivered to Mnet with the shoulder bag, with the paper entry form and the video in it. And I got quite far. So I got to the final 25 that, and then those get presented to Mnet at the time. And then the boss of Mnet at that time kind of went, wait a minute, I know this guy. He's going out with Henry Basson, who's working at Mnet, so he can't enter. So Henry was working as a publicist at that time for one of Mnet's other channels. And so that kind of disqualified me because, you know, family and whatever. So that is basically where my dreams of actually playing the game were cut short. The next season came around in 2009. It was shelved for a little while. It took a hiatus. And then 2009 came around, and I got the opportunity to work on Season 3 as behind the scenes as a content producer. So my first kind of reality job that I got was on Survivor Santa Carolina, Survivor SA Santa Carolina, which was Season 3. And I remember vividly my first confessional that I did was with the great Ashley Hayden. If you've never watched Season 3.
I've heard very good things. I heard like Rob level things about Ashley Hayden.
She is masterful. We also became really good friends afterwards, but she is master. She was such a great player in that season. It was a celebrity season. So, and they all played for charities. I remember vividly my first confessional sit down interview with Ashley, and she was just amazing. And then as a fan of the show, that is basically kind of where I really fell in love with the behind the scenes stuff and how the show is kind of put together. And then I worked on season four. Season four was Maldives, half celebrities and half, we called it Plebs versus Celebs. Mm-hmm. And which was not the official title. It was Survivor SA Maldives, but and Hundry then became the HOD for content on that season. So we worked together on that season. Season five came along, Champions. He was head of content again. I was one of the content producers, and then it was shelved. The show was shelved, and that's kind of where the. It's part of Survivor SA's history to be shelved for a few years and then come back.
Yeah. So I would love to hear, you know, we got a bit of your background with Survivor SA, but just in general with your background in production, I guess at what point, you know, between applying for Survivor and then sort of working on it behind the scenes, I mean, had you always had an affinity for working behind the scenes in production? Was this just sort of something that you stumbled into? Did you have any sort of film and TV background before you ended up working on Survivor?
I think my love for the medium, television, film, kind of. I've got a photograph of of me holding a clapperboard at age six. This is going back now. Wow, 1981. I was 6 years old. My dad's cousin was an independent filmmaker, and he made these cowboy ninja movies that featured black actors in these leading roles, and we have a phrase in Afrikaans called skopskiet en donder, which mm-hmm. means it's like kicking and shooting and fighting.
A phrase I hear often. My mom always describes action movies as
skopskiet en donder. Mm-hmm. But these action flicks that he made I'm from a small farm in the Free State in the middle of South Africa. And they came to shoot on the farm, and it was I fell in love because it was cameras and it was lights, and then I got like a little bit part that I had to walk into our kitchen, and because it was really kind of guerrilla filmmaking, and they made these films for with these leading black actors, and then showed them in the townships at the time, because there was no kind of film industry for black people in South Africa at the time. So it's 1981. It's still apartheid in the country, and I kind of it was the rude awakening of these. Of this beautiful filmmaking people that shot these films. And I remember how my dad told me about how these films are shown in the townships, that they put up white sheets and then they have these projectors and all of that type of stuff. So and that's basically the first time that I kind of realized that there's how it's done behind the scenes. And then I wanted to go and study film. I actually wanted to go and study film. And then my maths marks were really bad.
Respect.
It's one of those things, eh, Shannon?
I can only count to 3 points, so.
Shannon can only count to three, so.
So accurate.
I couldn't study film. I've got a BA degree with English and philosophy as majors, and then but I started working at the audiovisual department at the University of Johannesburg, and started editing and doing behind the scenes things for extra money, and then I was a club DJ for a while after Varsity, and then Henry and I bought our first home in 2001, and we moved in next door to a lady who was working at a soap opera, and she said, "Well, you know, there's this thing that happens." Actually, before that, a friend of mine from Varsity actually said to me, "Listen, I'm working at this soap opera, and I'm going to Taiwan to go and teach English. Do you want to take over from me? Because they need a replacement." So I started on a soap as a runner.
What soap?
And Seven Delon, which is the Afrikaans soap on SABC. And at the time, Nico Panaggio was the lead in that soap. So I've known Nico since 2001.
That's crazy.
Where he was working as an actor on the soap. And that's kind of where we met. So
did he always wear hats? Because I cannot imagine Nico Panaggio without wearing a hat now.
Oh no, he's got a very nice coif, eh? And there's salt and pepper, and he's really so. I mean, that's kind of where I started. So I started in production on that side, and kind of worked my way up. The lady that we moved into after we bought our home was our Survivor buddy. So she used to come over on a Monday night when Survivor was on, and we used to order pizzas and then sit down and watch Survivor religiously. So that's it's kind of all intrinsically weaved into each other, which is beautiful.
Yeah. And then getting to, you know, as you discussed, for how you got to become like head of season 6 and 7, two seasons we've really loved, and we'll talk about the like global fan reaction to them. But that's a huge jump. Like, how did that happen?
So like I mentioned, I'm always the positive one. So after Champions, when which was produced by Endemol in South Africa, Endemol was bought over by Shine. They became Endemol Shine, which I believe is producing Australian Survivor as well. Mm. And then, the company closed down in South Africa, and that was 2014. That 2014 that Champions aired. So 2014, 2015, 2016. I'm interested in finding out what happened to the format. You know. Does anybody still have it? The company's closed. So I met the head of Castaway International, which owns the format, on season 3, Julia Deck. And we started chatting. I was interested in how our formats work and all that. So I met Julia, and then season 4 she came through to the Maldives, and we chatted there again, and Henry met her there. And then season 5 she was in Malaysia, and then Henry and our other business partner Darren Lindsay were going to the Edinburgh Film Festival to go and look at some formats there, and they were passing through London. So I sent an email to Julia behind their backs to find out, hey, Julia, what has happened to the format? Could we set up a meeting? Henry and Darren are in London. And after I sent the mail, I CC'd them in, and I kind of went into the office, and he was livid with me because I did this. But
classic Survivor move.
blindside, you know. And literally 10 minutes later, Julia replied and said, "I'm available this date or this date." And so Darren and Henry went, and they spoke to Julia, and they found out, and that's kind of how we got the format back, and moved the format from that lapsed with Endemol to Afrikaans, our production company. And then we pitched it to Mnet. We were very ambitious, kind of walking in there, and Mnet revived it for season 6.
So it's pulled off. It's fantastic. And obviously we would not be here without all that, those machinations. So that's all great. What's so interesting about Philippines in particular is, especially when you compare it to something like Champions that came before it, I guess I wouldn't use the term back to basics because there were still twists and turns that were thrown in there. But in terms of like an overarching theme that wasn't as existent as something like Champions, which really had a bit of a format change to the game. So you find out, okay, I'm producing Survivor. It's coming back to South African airwaves. Did you always have the intention to go along with that theming? What was sort of like the first idea that came to your mind for a season once you found out that you were going to be producing it?
For me specifically, I'm a purist when it kind of comes to the format. I like the twists and I like the turns, and as we heard with the ever glorious Josh Wiggler and the vote nullifier at Final Four, I do like the twists, for me, I wanted to go back to a basic structure of the show and do great storytelling with the characters that we had and the incredible cast that we had on season six. So initially the plan was to kind of go, let's do two tribes, start off two tribes, and then we start bringing in a third tribe and playing along with these things. And as you kind of start developing, there are certain things that kind of pop up and you kind of go, oh, that's interesting. Ooh, maybe we should try that. And we can talk about it later, but specifically with development, I have a great team at our production company that when, like, for instance, Island of Secrets, when I finished the development on it, I then get them in and we literally do a play out of the season. So a brand steal, if you want,
that's a dream to me, is planning out a season by brand stealing it.
It's wonderful. So
I knew
so
that's what happened with Philippines. There's no other explanation for how Tom won.
So what happens is, and I go finish the development on it, and then we get the entire company in, and it's not a big team. It's like 25 people, and we're like a family. So you sit down, and you kind of go, all right, everybody's playing themselves. And we kind of talk through the entire thing, and it's a typical brand steal. I loved Rob's last brand steal, which I really enjoyed at Mike. You guys did such a bang up job on that, yep. But that's how I develop. So I come up with all the twists and turns, and then once you start brand stealing it, then certain things just kind of pop up and people. So for the first one on Island of Secrets, the leaders of the three tribes are sent to the Island of Secrets. Okay, so what do you do? What is your choice? And that type of stuff. And people come up with great ideas at the time. And then you also kind of see the loopholes in the development. And that's very exciting to kind of then come up with solutions to the loopholes.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, I want to talk about your role in all the pillars because I know that you have such a heavy hand in all of this. And I think we really see that with the Survivor South Africa format and then the editing. Like you say that you like more of like a, you know, back to basics or, you know, a purist kind of view of the game. And we always say that Survivor South Africa is the most raw, pure format that exists right now. So I think your fingerprints are kind of all over that. And I do want to talk about a lot of these production decisions. A question that I have is, like, how fluid are the production decisions? Obviously, you've got your twists and your mechanisms, and you know you're going to bring in a third tribe and stuff. Is it all completely set up before, or are you kind of also, like, adapting on the fly?
It is all set up before, but, I mean, obviously, when things happen on the island, you have to be able to kind of go and make changes on the spot and change. So, I mean, for instance, with season six, we started off with the content rollout for that season on version 12 when we arrived on the island, and we finished on version 28. So
wow.
that is the type of changes that happen whilst you are on the island, and you have standby challenges that you know you can bring in at a moment's notice, and if somebody quits the game, you have to make another plan, and there are different things that come in on that, i.e., why we had a jury removal with Martinez's exit in season six. And that was one of the changes that we had to bring in, because otherwise we would have been stuck there. It's very sad that Vader got jury removed there.
He's okay.
He's okay. So it is incredibly fluid, and you have to be prepared to kind of change something at a drop of a hat.
So when you're sort of watching things from afar, because when I got to go out to Fiji earlier this year, I was just so, I don't know, you don't usually think about how what you watch on the screen is such an iceberg, in that you only see the tip of everything, and there is so much going on around the action at all times. But as you said, you're planning these things out, and if something, I wouldn't say doesn't go right, but goes unexpectedly, like for example, you present to Maba, hey, there's an idol at tribal council that night, and then you see she doesn't play it and she goes home with it in her pocket. I mean, I guess as both a fan and as a producer, how do you sort of react to that? Is there any sort of resentment that, something you planned didn't go correctly? Is it more of a, oh, this creates a new opportunity, sort of like what you were talking about with running those brand steals with the other people?
It's content is king. Specifically on Survivor, say content. Well, any iteration of Survivor, content is king. So with something like the Maba idol, my heart broke for her when she didn't play it on that day, and we were in the control room, basically screaming at the screens. I had to calm everybody down and just say, everybody, just use inside voices, please. But
yeah, what is that sound telling me to play my idol? Just like production yelling at me from a different room.
The jungle is telling me to play my idol for some reason.
It's the smoke monster kind of growling in the background.
There's so much
investment from everybody, from the crew specifically. So when something like that happens, there's nothing you can do about it, and you have to let it play out. It is heartbreaking to not see it, because I mean, if she played that idol that night, Rob would have played his idol, and the game would have gone in a completely different direction. But as an idea that you plant and you have for that specific cycle of the game, and it plays out like that, there is nothing you can do, and you have to make that story count. And that's very exciting for me as well. So it's not that I feel bad or feel disappointed that they don't play the idol or that something doesn't work out. It's it ties into the story, which is ultimately what the viewer wants to see.
Yeah, and your approach to that is, I don't think, what every executive producer's approach would be. And it's something I completely co-sign, and I love it that you're like, this is the story, so like what happens will be good, or this will be the dynamic thing because it's led by the players. I do think, I mean, I have to, call out the US, and I'm not getting as in-depth a look into the US because I'm interviewing you, but I do think they're much more like, we wanted to go this way, not to like fix the results, but like to insert their arm a little bit more for something they might want to see happen. But to hear you say, this is a story that's happening out there, and like, let's let it play out and see what the players do. Like, I think that's so evident in the show, and it's something we've really loved about Survivor South Africa these last two seasons.
Yeah, I completely agree. And once again, back to the conversation I had with Rob this morning, where he had the same conversation with you guys, where he said, I came back from the island and the idols, and I made up this thing, and production didn't stop me. And I kind of went, okay, so I'm not cheating or anything, okay, I'm going to go with it. We try not to interfere. We're as Island of the Idols, and I'm sure it's going to come out at some point that they are actually telling the contestants not to reveal that Robin Sandra's on the island. Mm. Where
you'd never do
Island
that.
Of Secrets. Island of Secrets, what would be the point of kind of stopping the production and be people and kind of interfering in people's games? And that's just a personal thing from our side, just to let the players play their game.
Speaking of those players, I would love to get into the casting side of things, especially because season 6 has one of the most dynamite casts I can remember in recent memory. What's your general role in the casting process? And I guess when it came to season 6 specifically, what were you looking for, considering that, like you said, this is Survivor South Africa coming back once again after a brief hiatus?
Specifically with season 6, we wanted to cast big characters. I must give credit where credit's due. Hendrie Wasson is a master at casting. He sees through people and sees through BS as nobody's business. So he is masterful at it, and he can motivate for somebody to be on the season, even if you realize that person is going to walk out on episode 8. He's the mastermind behind the casting. So with our team working on the show, entries come in and you basically immediately know if somebody's going to work or not. Specifically with the video entries that is now kind of part of Survivor SA entries, you know the first two frames of what you see on screen, that person is going to work. And then it is about putting, specifically for season 6, we wanted to put out a stellar cast that will be memorable, that will be playing, and that will really kind of push the limits of what has been of archetypes that have been on Survivor, all iterations. So that is kind of what we went into season 6 with. Season 7, we went the other way. We said, okay, we don't want to see another Tom. We don't want to see another Tony. We don't want to see another Werner. Let's find different people that are big characters, like Tanya and like Jacques and like Rob and like Nicole, who bring something else to the table, but are also memorable and big. So that and also small. I mean, when Mubba walked into the panel interview with Mnet, she took my breath away. She had this beautiful suit pant on pantsuit on. And she was looking radiant and gorgeous, and she was soft spoken, and she had this laugh. And I mean, this beautiful creature who just exudes confidence. And then she just mesmerized the room. But in that combination of other people that were with her in the tribe, that confidence was kind of a little bit less than ever. And then you put her with a Mike and a Jeff, and you know, and you see how that confidence kind of flourishes, and then there she is. There's the player that you saw on that day. So it's also the combination of people, which is very important in casting and also putting them together in tribes.
Yeah, I mean, what is the approach in terms of like recruit versus applicant? I mean, I know for a lot of people we've spoken to, there's definitely the super fans. There are people who haven't watched a lot of it. I think what they all have in common is like you really did find amazing characters across the board. Like really, I think both season, like credit to Hendrie, as you're saying, because both seasons are cast extremely well. But, you know, is there much of a sense of between application and recruit, or is it just kind of varies between person to person?
To be quite honest, We did not have one recruit in either season.
Yeah, because I don't think we interviewed a recruit. So, yeah.
No, I mean, you have people like PK who's like, I never watched it before. So I guess it's more of a question to him as to like why he went out for this. But
have you met PK? That's interesting. I get it.
No, absolutely. So we considered recruiting people, and there were a few recruits that I suggested, but they also kind of fell out in the initial rounds. People that are visually beautiful, but then when you meet them in person, you kind of go, okay, not too bright, doesn't have to be, but you know, but no recruits were actually cast in the end. We tried to stay clear of it because there is a little bit more investment from somebody who is not recruited to actually play in the season, which shows on screen.
So on that note, you know, going back to choosing tribes, because something that really came to light in our innumerable postseason interviews is, you know, you have people saying, okay, I could understand, like Mike said, I could understand why I was put on a tribe with Letitia. John said, I could understand I could understand why I was put on a tribe with Tanya. So I guess when it comes to like putting those personalities together, are you looking for who's going to combat the most, who's going to get along the most? I'm just so intrigued to hear, like, from a psychoanalytic perspective, what made you put certain people in certain groups?
Okay, so once we have our cast, once we have all our cast members, they are interviewed by a psychologist, and they have to go through psychometric tests and all of that. And it's Hundry then gets that framework of information back from the psychologist, and because it's such sensitive information that, and the psychologist may only then share it with the executive producer because that is the person that they have signed off on the castaways. And then the two of them have a big discussion about what these people's personalities are and how will they interact with each other and how would they actually get the best content out of them. So putting a Jacques with a Tanya, or a Felix with a Tanya, or anybody with a Tanya, would create conflict and would create some sort of moment that would make for great television, or create a bond, like for instance with Rob and Nathan. That was an intentional thing because both of their personalities kind of they're like magnets, so that's why they kind of were put together. But that kind of psychological part of the casting, I'm not that privy to, because I'd rather just stay away and let the professionals do their job. I'm all for kind of saying yay or nay at the end and motivating for certain characters that I think will make great story. But the psychological connection, I leave to Hundry and the psychologist. So they kind of do those breakups. I also then once Hundry kind of goes, okay, what do you think about this tribe? And look, it still happened in Samoa. We were 2 days away from shooting, and Hundry and I were in our hotel room kind of going, okay, but if you put Jacques here and you put Tanya on that tribe, then Laume has got Tanya and it's got Letitia. Oh, no, that's not going to work. Okay, so let's put Tanya with Jacques. And then, so it happened like 3 days before we started shooting. We only literally got the tribes together like on the day. Hundry was still making unsure about. So it is also a little bit of luck of the draw. I hate using the word luck after Jean's tribal council. So, but you have to kind of factor it in when you're producing the show. So at least not playing it.
Yeah, now I feel like Hundry is like the evil genius because we did hear it so much in the deep dives. It was like, yeah, I specifically said I don't work well with this type of personality. And it was like, oh, I'm now with that type of personality. So Hundry, I mean, he honestly seems brilliant and also, as you know, a little mean. So that's brilliant.
He's an evil genius, Shannon. He is definitely an evil genius. He's my little even genius.
You mentioned Samoa, and I'm very intrigued because we see the two seasons so far took place in the Philippines and in Samoa, which are two places that I know Survivor US filmed before. Once you got the go-ahead to produce Survivor under your tutelage, when it came to location scouting, going back to that research and development thing, what led you to end up pursuing those specific locations so far?
So, being part of the Survivor global Survivor family means that you have access to all Survivor Central's information, and they have different locations across the world, and you kind of get tied into that. So you kind of meet up with other producers, and you can phone and find out, and you have email and Skype conversations with other producers from all the iterations, international. I'm talking Italy, Croatia, Russia, and Survivor Central kind of manages that, and they have certain locations that they suggest, and then also the other thing that we have to take into consideration is the horrific state of our currency. So the Rand is, as you probably know or don't know, not a great currency at the moment. It hasn't been for a long time, but we have to take that into consideration in terms of location that we go to. So with the Philippines, the currency is kind of on par. And then and that's kind of one of the big reasons that we went there is because of budgetary reasons. And then the same thing happened to Samoa. It was a budget consideration, on a whole bunch of levels. But yeah, it's, those were some of the reasons why we did specifically go to the Philippines and Samoa and ended up there. As I said, I'm currently researching for season 8, and there are other options out there that have not been included in Survivor Central, so which is very exciting. It's like you're being I kind of feel like Indiana Jones at some point, kind of doing research on locations that are available in the world, and the world's a big place. So I mean, hopefully we can find somewhere that we can start playing again.
Yeah, a new location in this day and age of Survivor would be like so novel in a day and age where everyone's in Fiji. If it's a new location within Fiji, like I'm not sure that counts. I feel like it has to be outside of Fiji.
Yeah, we considered Fiji as well, Sabu Sabu, where Australian Survivors now kind of made home. So we did scout that. We scouted Samoa. And then we also went to Papua New Guinea, which is a brand new location that we did scout. There was just not enough development time for that location to actually make it a viable one to go to. But I mean, that is also a brand new location.
Mm. Just jumping back to casting for a quick second. Is there anyone who's like surprised you massively from what you saw through like a pretty extensive casting process? You know, good and bad. Has anyone really shocked you in that capacity?
That's a very interesting question.
Shannon, he's not going to get asked out to more breakfast if he answers this question.
Maybe, no, but not in like a bad way, but just in like an interesting way. I mean, I guess like a lot of people you really probably get a sense of, but you know, people can be really different out on like, the island, I'm sure.
You mean like duds?
No, not in a bad way.
Like, I mean, if you get like a sense of how someone is in the casting room, like I wonder, for example, like how Werner came across while you were interviewing him, as opposed to how he ended up playing out on the island.
Oh, Werner is exactly the same in real life as he was on the island. He's cool, calm, he's collected. He is a masterful manipulator. He walked into that room knowing that he was going to be cast. And
he got ventilated.
No, it's completely. It's the same thing with Rob. He walked into that room knowing that he was going to be cast, and that's it's sometimes I suppose it's surprising that you kind of go, I'm going to have you on the show, but oh my goodness, I'm going to have you on the show. And then you realize that it's the biggest thing. Like, for instance, Nathan, I had dinner the other night with Nathan and sat him down and we started talking about Survivor, and he kind of went, I cannot thank you enough for the fact that you saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. And I went, dude, why would you say that? And he tried to explain that he didn't see himself as being on the show because it's the weirdest thing. People kind of go, I don't know if I'm good enough to do this. And then they get on the show and then they realize that they're good enough to do this. And then they bloom. I mean, they just, it's sorry, Mike.
oh no, listen, I'm happy that they turn into me. That's very glad to hear on the island.
And it's amazing to see. Have there been disappointments in casting that we have had? Yes, there has been, off the top of my head, about three people, but there's nothing you can do about it. I mean, also we tend to forget what kind of circumstances the people go into when they start playing Survivor. It is difficult. There is no toilet. There is nothing. There is zip. And people go into the game not realizing that it's going to be that tough. And once they do, they just freak out. And that's also a very real thing to keep in mind, specifically with people who then disappoint you and kind of go out of the show.
So you end up, you know, you got your cast down, you've got your evil genius organizing them into tribes, you got the location down. From a production perspective, from when the game starts, what amount of time are you there on location beforehand planning everything out?
Okay, so I'm going to just talk about season 7 for the moment because that's clear in my mind at the moment. Our department usually starts about a month and a half before the majority of the crew then comes through. They start with games with tribal council. And we were there basically a week after that. So I was in Samoa for about a month before any of the technical crew came through. And that's kind of, and every day you are signing off looks and feels, you are signing off idols, you are signing off idol notes. And I'm very hands-on with our department because that's kind of my background. So through SOAP and then getting into the directing side of it. So I'm very hands-on with the design of the logos and the buffs and the idle notes and all that. So I spend quite a lot of time in our department kind of signing off stuff and helping design and trying my hand at helping to build and whatever, but most of the time that doesn't happen because I get chased away by the art director Val Groeneveld. But I'm very hands-on with kind of that type of stuff, where Hundry is then busy with casting and kind of putting together the cast list for the content producers who then need to kind of consume all of this information about the people that they are going to be best friends with on the island. When the crew arrives, then it's about a week before we start shooting. We use our internal crew to chaperone the contestants with. So each contestant then travels with a crew member to the location. And then the machine just kind of starts working. And then when we start shooting, it's all hands on deck, 39 days, a go, 12-hour days for the crew, 18-hour days for myself and Hundry. And then things just kind of happen. And that machine is beautiful. It's, oh man, you saw in Fiji. It's just things go. And that's great.
As a huge fan of the show, do you ever have a winner pick before filming starts? And if so, who were those winner picks?
I have a winner pick.
You're holding his feet to the fire.
Is that a hard question? I feel like that was just like a little fun.
Who was a casting dud?
I never said dud. I just meant who surprised you in a positive or negative way.
I love it, Shannon. I have a winner pick for Island of the Idols, which I'd love to talk to you guys about if we have time. But my winner pick for Island of the Idols is Tommy. So I'm putting my money on it. I'm putting it out there as well. But for season 6 and 7, I try and stay away from predicting winners because it is so difficult. And things change so much on the island that you can't go in. You have your favorites kind of going into the game, but it's favorites, not winner picks. So and people that you really kind of root for, hoping, you know, they'll make the right decisions and they get far enough in the game. So I have those, but I don't have a winner pick. The crew do. They kind of put bets down on players at the beginning of the season, and then the winner of the winner's pick kind of happens at the finale when the pot kind of comes together, and then the winners share the money if there's more than one winner of the winner's pick.
When it comes to being dialed into the events out on the island, I mean, are you constantly getting notifications through the day as to what's going on? Do you sort of get like a daily recap at the end of each day? How exactly do you receive information as it's happening out there?
So with season 6, we had daily content meetings at the end of the day. So content download, those can go on for like hours. So we're trying to kind of slim it down for season 7. So what happens is the content teams for each tribe, there's a WhatsApp group. So you had a Ta'alo WhatsApp group, and you had a Lamei WhatsApp group, and a Sa'ula WhatsApp group, and they literally update as they go along. They are on their phones and they update, and those get sent to us. And then we have our head of content this season, Nina Swart, kind of collated that, and she made a content breakdown or a content report for the end of the day. So the content producers really have kind of the toughest job, because they start in the mornings at 5, and then at night when they come back, they have dinner, and then we go into a content meeting. And those meetings, like I said, could go on for like 3 hours. So, but if because we were on these groups, you kind of know what the story is for the day, and the story kind of develops, and it's wonderful to see that happen with the different groups, and you kind of already start putting together how the edit will work out for that episode because of what is happening on the content report coming through on WhatsApp. I mean, it really has changed the way that we work with the content team. I remember when in my first season that I was content producing for season 3, we used to have little books that we wrote all our notes on, and then we'd go back that evening, and then everybody would report, and it was a storytelling event, and then you had these content producers who wanted to outshine the other one by telling the best story, and kind of and I kind of just went, okay, this happened, da da da, you know, these are the points. But those meetings then got really long, and it's really ridiculous. But anyway, so that's basically how we kind of stay on top of the story. So by the time that we get to tribal council that evening, you know exactly who is up for elimination, who might go home, who who will probably play an idol or not, which is phenomenal just to kind of see, because of the fact that the content producers become the counselors for the castaways. Those are the only people that the castaways can talk to, and they are encouraged from the beginning to open up to them and be honest with them. And that is basically who you have to trust in the game, are the content producers. And that that's a big thing for them to actually realize and get their wrap their heads around, to actually be honest with the content producers in the end. And sometimes it doesn't happen. They just kind of go, I don't trust you. I'm not going to trust you. I'm not going to open up to you. And then you just can't tell that story, which is sad.
Yeah, I mean, I want to be on those WhatsApp threads. I can't even imagine some of the messages you must have received in the last couple of years. Like, okay, Martinez just told Katinka it doesn't matter if she dies. Like, that must be crazy.
It's
like,
fun.
Yeah.
It is so much fun.
Yeah, I mean, as a producer, you have now been privy to, I think, really some of the best moments in Survivor history. Like, what's it like to sit there in episode 2 as they're going to Rocks? And you're like, you know, I think the season's going to be in success that we've, like, brought it back. Like, some of those amazing moments, like, what's it like to watch that from the sidelines and know that, as a fan, that's going to be an incredible TV moment?
Because the control room for that tribal council was a little bit offshore, because everything was in that beautiful created tribal council on the water. And we were sitting in that control room, and when we realized that they were actually going to Rocks, we always have Rocks available in Nico's podium. Yeah, absolutely. But when we realized that they were going to vote, they're going to go and go to Rocks, it was mesmerizing. I mean, we sat there and we couldn't believe our luck, because the Rocks don't happen.
No.
Not in episode 2. And very rarely are people that invested in their decisions at tribal council to actually then, after you go for a revote, then you go to Rocks. I mean, what? So we were sitting there and kind of going flabbergasted. And then I remember when we were on the boat back to base camp, I looked over and I said to Andre, did we just go to Rocks? And he said, no. We just lost somebody through Rocks. And I only realized that the next morning when the castaways walked in and Nico said, Mindanao, getting your first look at the new Luzon, and Neil voted out at the previous tribal council. And I kind of went, no, he wasn't voted out. He got voted out by Rocks. And you kind of go realize that, and it's, oh man, it's you know you're in for a treat of a season.
Yeah, and that really put the Survivor South Africa on the map, I think, like, in terms of the rebooted version. Like the premiere was amazing. It's one of my favorite premieres. But, like, we, you know, it was, like, towards the end of Ghost Island, and that's, I think, when everyone started, like, getting, like, you have to watch. They went to Rocks in episode 2. Like, you could not at that point not watch. And I'm so grateful it happened. Like, what an incredible moment, and people were just, like, enthralled from then.
It was crazy, eh? And, oh, man. And just kind of reliving it now, it's just, you realize how insane that was.
You speak about Tribal Council, and I know there's been some behind-the-scenes videos a little bit in Season 7 that got to see your lovely face on the screen. You find out a little bit about what's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
At what point in the process do you sort of talk with the art department about the theming? And I know you talked about this on video, but I would love to hear a bit more for everybody out there about what, how you found out about the whole octopus theming behind Season 7's art direction.
So, when we actually went to Samoa, when we did our rounds, we went to Fiji, we went to Samoa, and then we went to Papua New Guinea. Samoa was the last stop of the round. And when we arrived there, we went to this island, the Nusa Efe, which is the island of secrets, the iconic island of secrets now. And I asked our guide on the island. I said to her, Lisa, why has this never been used? The US shot 4 seasons here. Australia shot 2 seasons here. Why did they never use this? And she said to me, because no, it wasn't the bad island. But she said to me that they just never kind of had any use for it. And I kind of went, okay. And then I spoke to one of our Samoan guides and I said, okay, so it's called Nusa Efe. What does Nusa Efe mean? And he said, well, it's one of the mythical stories of Samoa is about this half man, half octopus who came out of the mountains and then made his home on this island. And it's called the Island of the Octopus. Now, at that time, we did Island of Secrets, the announcement of season 6 at the finale. We had the Island of Secrets logo, which I designed, and we had these two octopi kind of holding the Island of Secrets logos. And that moment when he said it's called Nusa Efe, the Island of the Octopus, and I kind of went, okay, we just had to come here. This is the Island of Secrets. This is what we were looking for. So everything kind of started going from that. Val Groenewald, who is our art director, production designer, then came up with the beautiful tribal council with the octopi. And then that is kind of where all the mythological creatures and the names came from for the tribes. So Saula means swordfish, which is also part of the mythology of Samoa. Laumei is turtle, which is also very sacred. And then Taolo, which is the seahorse. So the whole aquatic theme kind of just jumped out. And it was always meant to be. I don't know why, but the octopus on the logo and then the Island of the Octopus and then everything kind of just started coming together. And that's basically how we started working towards that specific theme. Kismet, I suppose.
So wait, the logo just randomly had octopi on it, and then you happened to find an island of the octopus?
I know. That's ridiculous. That's, you know, I'm fascinated by octopi. They're incredible creatures and incredibly clever creatures. And it made sense for me to kind of include them in the Island of Secrets, because you have to be clever and you have to think about what you're going to do and you have to kind of use that. And that's kind of why I included it in the initial logo. But then you arrive in Samoa and this island's called the Island of the Octopus. Then I'm going to go, we have to shoot you.
Amazing.
It was meant to be.
So you were talking about, you know, the content creation beforehand, and you're talking about like, okay, we're already starting to plan out how the edit's going to look. Does that editing process, and I don't want to get too far ahead because I'm sure we have a lot of stuff to talk about on the island as well, but in terms of the editing process, does that happen while the season's going on, or do you wait until, okay, final tribal council's done, we have a pretty good handle as to who's winning at this point, now we can start the editing process?
So, with us specifically, we have our core editing team on the island. So they start looking at footage and making sure that the things that the content producers say are on camera are actually on camera. So finding the idols, did Jacques do it on camera? Did we see Jacques actually finding his idol with Kubis? Okay, the footage is there. So they start, and then they start putting sequences together. The challenge editor starts putting the challenges together. So they start basically from day one. Then we have our head editor then flew back to South Africa when Merge happened with drives and footage that he could start working on episode 1. And then the editors kind of continue throughout the season to kind of have sunk up challenges and made sure that storylines kind of that we know that that's going to be in the show kind of gets put on a timeline, and the editing process does start on the island already. We don't wait until we have everything and then start editing. But also, we have such a small editing team. Literally, we have 4 editors, an assistant editor. I did all the previously ons, next time ons. Mm-hmm. I cut Whoa. Those myself. So I'm, yeah. And Hundry cuts Tribal Council. So he does the content selection for Tribal Council. So wow. It's 7 people, basically. 8 people? Yeah. 7 people basically working on the show. And that is amazing. I mean, that is our editing team.
You know, we talk about the editing so much and about how Survivor yeah. South Africa has a really truthful, honest edit. And you show us people without much of an agenda. And so, you know, being such a big part of that small team doing that, like, what is your... You know, what is your take on that, especially compared to, you know, you watch all the other international versions and it's so different. So how is that kind of informed in your perspective?
For us, it's very important to kind of, because you buy into a character, you buy into a person playing the game. And for us, that's very, very important. I went to the Edge of Extinction finale in May. And I met up with Jesse Jensen, who's the now executive producer, one of the executive producers. And I said to him, I hope you're not angry at us. And he kind of went, why would we be angry at you? And I said to him, well, because of the fact that we are, that people are criticizing your editing style versus our editing style, because I don't want to be in competition with US Survivor. It's that's not what the plan is. And he said, no, you do you, boo. It's you don't have to apologize for anything, but we have a different type of storytelling. And the one thing that we always kind of, and this is Craig Blixley, who is our head editor. He's been editing from season 1. And he always says you have to put somebody in a situation for the content to come out. So the going to fetch water. Okay, fetching water. There's something happening. It's not just talking heads. You need to show camp life. If something happens there, you need to kind of do a setup. Okay, Dante just came out of the water. Tanya says female gets delivered. Tanya comes up. She says she can hang on her 2 fingers. Dante is looking at her and he says, I really don't care. And so there's always some sort of movement that happens. And I think that kind of showing camp life and showing the environment that they are in and setting up the scene for the content that happens in the scene is very important. And I think that's what we're really good at. And I know there's been criticism about us not giving the audience a blind side every time that we go to Tribal Council and that we're predictable with predictable boots. But I also kind of feel that at some point you can't always BS the viewer. You have to tell the honest story for that character to actually come to its full potential.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you're preaching to the choir about that. I definitely like to, from a story perspective, I want to see, to borrow some parlance from a fellow RHAP podcast, why blank lost. And yes. Sometimes some editing techniques don't necessarily show that, or they show it in maybe a false way. And I think that you do a great job of really highlighting how everything comes together, even if something like a Paul situation happens where it's so in the moment that, you know, you try to piece together whatever you can, but there might even be some cases where even from what you can garner from the edited footage, you don't necessarily know what exactly happened.
Absolutely. And something like the Paul vote, That, I mean, I listened to Nicole's chat with you, Mike, and how it changed in the moment, but that they always had that kind of in the back of their minds. They didn't quite trust Paul. And when the whole trust thing came out at Tribal Council, it changed their minds. So they basically talked themselves into kind of voting for Paul at that stage. And you have to kind of tell that story. And yes, some of the boots were predictable and it's sad, but it's also kind of what the tribe mentality is. And I've got a theory about tribe mentality and how that is directed by the strong players in the tribe and how they determine the tribe kind of ethos and how the tribe plays. Like, for instance, Saulo, who are family orientated, and they went with that family thing from day one. And Laomei, who was all about the fun and all about the Darao and all about the Darao.
That's the sequel that you're putting out, right? All about the Darao.
All about the Darao. Listen, I did my first wand off this week, so don't joke.
Oh my god! What other Survivor series director is putting out wand offs? Like, this is why we're so lucky to have you.
No, Hundred and I were listening to the wand off last week, we were laughing so hard. And then I kind of went, okay, now I have to do one because, you know, you're not a true Survivor fan unless you've done a wand off. So I did mine this week
you
and it's out there now.
Survivor fan.
I'm also a fan.
This is research and development.
Yeah, it's part of... And I'll send it to you and you can have a listen to it. Now I've lost my train of thought because I mentioned the wand off, and now that's all I'm going to think of.
I don't know how we got on.
The tribe mentality, so the Darao of it all, and then and with Ta'alo, it was all about strategy and all about kind of who's who, and you know, the paranoia that was evident. But that is how the game works, and then when you merge. One of those mentalities take charge of the game, and that's what happens. The same thing happened in season six where Varad was the cool, calm, and collected, and everybody just fell into place because he was guiding the mentality, the ethos of that of the whether it was merge or. Luzon 2.0 or wherever he ended up, he guided that and everybody just fell in line. And the same thing happened with Rob. The great players create the ethos of camp life and people fall in line with that. And for first time players, that is kind of what happens. It's my theory, you know, use it, don't use it. But that's kind of how I feel about season six and seven is there were clear ethos on the tribes and they followed that rule. And it's because of deprivation. It's this sleep deprivation and food deprivation. And you have to kind of fall in line and it's you have to create that society. And that's kind of what happens.
You were talking about the your chief editor being from season one. When you end up coming back to bring back Survivor South Africa, how many resources did you utilize from those previous instances? And I guess most prominently, what was sort of the process like getting Nico involved once more?
Look, Nico Panaggio was on board from day one. So Nico started as host of Survivor the same season that I started content producing. We met back up there. So after our little stint together, me as a runner, him as an actor on the soap, he was then presented with the opportunity to host Survivor SA. And that was the first season. And so we connected again. And Nico is, if you think I'm a big Survivor fan, Nico is as big a Survivor fan as I am. He is a complete geek. The only thing that Nico wants to do is he wants a season of hosts versus heroes. wants to be on a tribe with Jeff Probst, and he wants to be on a tribe with Matt Chisholm, and he wants to be on a tribe with
Matt Chisholm reference.
I brought that in just for you. And he wants to play host versus heroes, and that's all he wants to do. He's a super fan as well. So getting him on board again was the easiest thing. Also, he is one of the biggest celebrities in South Africa. So for him to kind of come back into the fold for Survivor was the easiest thing in the world. Nico he's a phenomenal guy. His family is amazing. His family travels with him to location. So and that's something that we've very proud of, is the fact that previously his family didn't go with him, but he's just better with his family there. He's got two young girls who he loves dearly, and his wife Christy is wonderful. So they kind of become part of the family, of the Survivor family. And then the biggest treat for the girls are to actually go onto the set and then see how dad works. So they come to tribal council and they get their buffs, and then once or twice we allow them to come and play a game, do a little puzzle with mom. So it's fascinating to see how their family unit works. But then he is just better with them there. So getting Nico back was an easy task because he loves the show, and we love working with him.
Amazing. Yeah, I mean, that's so cool. That's like my dream now. I've decided to be a child whose parent is hosting Survivor, and I can just go live out on Survivor. I want
to
go back.
I thought you said your dream was to have a Survivor host versus heroes, because now that seems like, listen, no offense to the other hosts, my money's on Nico.
But there's so few Survivor hosts. Can we also make it podcast hosts and then we'll go out? I don't want to.
Shannon, we would get rolled over by some of these guys.
I know. Definitely.
I would gladly lay down my torture matchism.
Same.
Yeah, but you can bring in the French host and the the Austrian host and the Croatian host, and you know, make up a kind of solid host. And it'll be all male, which is really weird. But all host kind of tribe sounds like fun to me.
Yeah, I mean, I want to talk about as well, you know, going back to the island itself. And I think there's so much ingenuity when it comes to Survivor South Africa and things that we haven't seen in other iterations, and just like cool ideas you wouldn't think to do, like three tribes of seven. We hadn't seen that before, but like, why not do that? That's a cool, at the time I liked it, was like, felt unstable. It felt like, you know, that uneven number. And then, you know, beyond that, you know, Idols of Tribal Council, and when you did, you know, Exile Island in Philippines, and then the multiple immunities in Island of Secrets. So you bring in, I think, a lot of like kind of new ideas. So what's your approach to how much you kind of want to keep it on track, considering you're just back with the rebooted version, versus how much you do kind of want to test out cool things and see how they work?
I think for me as a fan, and first and foremost, that's kind of how we go into development with it, is as a fan, what have you not seen? And what would you like to see? And what would be an interesting twist to kind of stuff that you've seen before? Like, for instance, the Outpost in New Zealand had such a great concept. And then how do you take that and tweak it to work for you? And Ghost Island, the Ghost Island games was such an interesting idea. How do you tweak it and make it your own with a theme like Island of Secrets? So for me, I first and foremost, it's a fan thing of, I haven't seen this before, and I think people like it. And then you try it out, and you kind of play with what you can do, and then sometimes it works and sometimes it really doesn't. Like, for instance, the very famous Final Four vote nullifier, which in retrospect was maybe not such a great idea.
Don't let Josh shame you. Don't let him.
Also, I texted Josh, by the way, when you put out a wand off, and he texted me back in all caps, ridiculous! So, Josh is in love with the fact that you put out a wand off, and I'm sure he's accepting of many more. I want to stay on that note of Island of Secrets, because, you know, again, the first season, Philippines didn't really have an overarching theme. I think you were really wanting to focus on just, you know, putting out a great season of Survivor, which you did in spades. Now you have your feet under you. What made you want to focus on a themed season, and what made you eventually decide on this idea of Island of Secrets?
So when we got the go ahead from the broadcaster to actually go for season 7, we didn't have any idea where we were going. So we had to come up with a concept that would translate and which we could play anywhere in the world. And that's how the Island of Secrets kind of came about. At the time, we were just coming off Ghost Island, which played in a lot of the ideas of that. We just came off season 2 of Survivor New Zealand with the Outpost. So that kind of all fed into the idea of the Island of Secrets. But we didn't have a location. We only went scouting for a location after we announced season 8. So we were in casting in South Africa, and we were scouting for location for season 7 at the same time. So that is the reason. The reason why we had announced Island of Secrets, and it helped that it wasn't location based. So that was the reason why we went with the Island of Secrets theme initially. But when we pitched the idea to the broadcaster, it was so clear, because at the same time that you kind of go, okay, we need a themed season that needs to speak to something that the audience have not seen before or have not experienced before, or has some iteration of something that kind of is familiar to them, Exile Island. I'm specifically talking about Redemption Island. I'm specifically talking about the South African audience. And then something that could work for that. And it became very clear very quickly, and the Island of Secrets kind of got born from that. And so we pitched the Island of Secrets to Mnet. They were very happy with it, and they were very happy with the concept. And then, like I said, I started developing Island of Secrets basically on the final tribal council of Philippines. So that's kind of how obsessed I am, mm-hmm. which is maybe not healthy. Hey.
No, we all get it. Believe me, you're in safe company here. But, you know, because Island of Secrets, I think it ended up being so poetic that it really was like the 22nd player of the season. And the fact that Rob brought it back in the final tribal council and talked about, like, he'd mastered it the most. So he, you know, ended up winning the whole season. And because it was so broad, I think, and it was kind of an enigma. It wasn't set on one thing. You see some of these islands where it's very much like a set formula, and that made it like impossible to pin down for the contestants, I think. And I think that's why so many of them had a problem with it. And when you look back at it now, you know, it was so diverse. There was so many different ideas. Every episode kind of gave you something different from Island of Secrets. If you look back at anything like, wow, that worked particularly well. And then some other things like, that didn't go so well in terms of the twists and advantages that you offered there?
Yeah. Specifically, I want to go back to the final four vote nullifier. The reason why we put that in was because as a fan and a member of the fan community and a student of the game, I know how people have a visceral negative feeling about the final four fire making, and that's one of the reasons why that was brought in, because
made fire making impossible.
Exactly, because somebody's vote would be nullified and it would be a 3 vote and a 2-1 at the most. But so that obviously didn't, Letitia didn't play it, and And it turned out what it turned out to. But stuff that worked for me was the family member on the island with Gina visiting Steffi. I thought that was a particular thing that worked really well, because if Jacques then had made his decision and at the Secret Santa challenge decided to then take the advantage, which should have should have been clear, then he would have been on the island with his wife, and that would have been a nice bow to his storyline, even though he would have been voted out the next day. But that would have been a great bow to it. But now and here we get back to not interfering. So the big thing on that is the story starts telling itself as soon as those castaways get marooned, and you have to take whatever happens in your stride and use that to tell the most compelling story. And that's the beauty of Survivor, any iteration, is the fact that you are telling real people's story in an environment that is so far removed from daily lives that you can't predict. And that's the exciting part about it. Something else that did work for me was with Tanya, that specific storyline where she went to the Island of Secrets. She could have gone back, but she decided to stay another day and then choose her own tribe. I thought that specifically was quite fun. I know people had problems with that, but I thought she played it really well, and she was such a great character, and to have kept her on for a little bit longer and to see Ta'alo kind of go into that panic mode when they got the tree mail was wonderful. But it's also then, I mean, if anybody else was sent to Island of Secrets, then it would have been Tanya going home and, you know, or they would have come back and then made a decision on voting Tanya off anyway. So it's wonderful how these decisions that get made in the game necessarily dictate where the story is going, but also inform on characters and where they are in their thoughts.
Yeah, and the genre thing is particularly for me really indicative of you shouldn't insert your arm into, you know, into what's happening on the show, because, you know, as production and as viewers, I think we wanted that bow on the story. As you said, we wanted Jacques to see his wife, and as a friend to Jacques and as a human being, of course, that's what I wanted of him in that moment. But then, like, as a viewer of the show, it will continue to be more endlessly fascinating for me that we didn't get that, and that it was so painfully ironic that if he hadn't tried to save it to see his wife, he would have seen his wife. And it's the same thing as, like, you know, US Survivor has fire making in a final three so that Verna wins Philippines. And believe me, I was rooting for Verna, and as someone who loves Verna as a person and player, I wanted him to win. But then we kind of get these results where it's like, it's not what you wanted, but it's actually what you needed as a viewer. Like, Tom was the winner that the season required, and you would only know that once it happened. So by kind of letting it play out by itself, it's not the obvious thing, but it's almost like, it's like the minor chord where it should be the major chord, which is more interesting to me. So I really love that.
Absolutely. The minor seventh diminished. I mean, it's absolutely that.
That's what Tom's
doing. And yeah, it's the minor seventh
diminished. Now there's going to be some sort of wand up about an Island of Secret chord.
Oh my goodness. I can't believe I actually shared that with you.
On the note of Island of Secrets, obviously, look, we made a whole game, Name That Lie, out of all the attempts the castaways made to try to, you know, try to cast a pall over Island of Secrets to, you know, confuse their tribe mates. What's your reaction? Were you expecting that much lying from the castaways about what exactly happened on Island of Secrets, given the name of it?
That blew my mind. Look, the idea of Island of Secrets, to be quite honest, started with Katinka, in season six, who couldn't keep a secret. She was horrible at keeping secrets. So that was kind of the springboard from where we worked on when I started kind of developing the theme, was Katinka can't keep a secret. So what if there was an island full of secrets, and what happens if you go to that island and you come back and you have to keep a secret? And the fact that this cast just couldn't keep a secret, I mean, it blows my mind. Come up with something else. And I love Name That Lie. It's one of my favorite things of your podcast, was the fact that it became a theme this season, mm-hmm. of just how bad can you be when you come back from the Island of Secrets? Really? I mean, anyway, so for me, that's lovely. It's the fact that the Island of Secrets, like you said, Mike, 22nd castaway, and that it screwed with so many people's brains about as I always say, when you go to an island like that, you have to keep the lie as simple as possible. Shannon, I think you also, as simple as possible, because the more elaborate it gets, Nathan, Dad, hello. Mm-hmm. I mean, seriously? And then Darrell wanting, was it Sean Janelle who kind of mentioned that Nathan's dad became Darrell's lie as well? It was just fascinating to see that these people just kind of couldn't come up with something proper. And then the one person who came up with something proper was so out of left field. Seriously, how I don't understand. I listened to Rob's deep dive and I still don't understand how that is going to work. I know you guys like the
do it.
The
lie, it's so good.
No, but how does that work, Shannon?
I don't know. Work it out.
How do you?
Yeah, it's gonna be Rob's gonna Nico? Be like, excuse me, LaRue. Can you like whisper in my ear? I'm going to say a name and you have to whisper in my ear who they voted for.
Man, it was ridiculous. And for poor Mikey to fall for that, man, it broke my heart, eh? But once again, you can't interfere. You can't then say to Rob, no, Rob, you are cheating. You can't tell that lie. And, you know, and then it becomes one of the best lies of the season.
I love this idea. LaRue's just like dying to just step out from behind production and just be like, Mike, it's clearly not true. Think about it. It makes no sense. You just died to do it and you can't. Yeah, but I want to ask you as a fan and a producer as well. So a couple of things. Where do you currently sit on the jury format? Because I know that Island of Secrets kind of did a bit of both and we just saw the old format, and obviously Philippines had the new format. So where do you sit with that?
We found that doing both this season was very advantageous. We used some of the back and forth from the new format in the actual edit of the three with their final speeches to the jury.
Yeah.
In terms of, because. And what I loved about using both this season was the fact that everybody got something to say. So everybody had some sort of semblance of screen time in the final tribal council where they had something to say to the castaways. And then using the final discussion as a, with the three tiers that I play out last, and using that as motivation for certain things to happen, specifically the Rob Mubba thing. Rob lost his temper with Mubba, and it was evident on screen that he lost his temper with Mubba there. But the whole interaction after that, when they discussed the outward outplay out last, was a little bit. Was inserted in there, and that's kind of where our editing helped in terms of the final tribal council. But it was an exceptionally long tribal council because we had like 3.5 hours that we had to cut down, and we cut it down as much as possible. But guys, there was so much good stuff in there that we didn't show, and it broke my heart.
I'm up for the director's cut. Send it to my Gmail.
Listen, I can send you the entire 3 hours if you want to. I won't bore you with that. But it was really an amazing tribal council, but we went with the old version because it just cut better. We have a cut of the Out Win Out Play Out Last, but because we had the opening statements, a lot of the stuff that was said in the opening statements were repeated by the castaways, by the jury, and so we kind of made a edited decision not to go with the Out Win Out Play Out Last section of it. That being said, I do like the old version a little bit better. It's great to have that back and forth, but because people have certain things that they need to say to the final three or the final two, that addressing the castaways one-on-one has a more dramatic impact for me than the back and forth discussion of Out Win Out Play Out Last.
Yeah, on that note about final three and final two, you know, I think it's a little common knowledge that in Philippines end up becoming a final two due in part to the actions of Martinez. And then you end up going to a final three in Survivor South Africa, Island of Secrets. Was that just from a logistical choice because you had 21 castaways? I guess through comparing the two, is there any sort of benefits or drawbacks you see of a final three versus a final two?
Once again, it's keeping not only the castaways, but the audience in suspense about, is it going to be a final two? Is it going to be a final three? Philippines, because it was a reboot, kind of, I always intended it to be a final two. So just to kind of have that. Because we started off with three tribes on season seven, that was also kind of a speaking to the final three at the end. It was always going to be a final two in Philippines and always a final three. It's just to keep both the castaways and the viewers on the edge of their seats because they don't always know.
Mm. I love that. And that's my preference. Like when people ask, like, do you want a final three or final two? Like, I like the diversity in that. It's just like another part of the game to try and predict and fail at predicting.
Yeah, absolutely. I did, however, think that season seven, if there's one thing that I would kind of reconsider, it would have been a slightly smaller jury. I think the jury was too big.
Yeah, I want to talk about that because I think one thing that we really noticed from the past couple instances of Survivor South Africa is just how, at least from an editing perspective, vocal the jury is. And I'm sure it's happened before in Survivor US as well. But I mean, Jeff became the meme king of the season because it felt like we really saw a lot of, you know, his particular reactions. In Philippines, we saw a lot from like Palesa, Shane, Vusi in the beginning there. Was it really, you know, that big in person? And in that case, was it sort of part of what you were talking about before where it's like, well, we could try to speak up and tell them to, you know, keep their reactions more muted, but maybe that's us sticking our heads too far into the game.
So with the jury specifically, it's once again, we tell them to react if they feel like that something is being said. We do encourage them to react. We don't police how big their reaction is. And if you are going to be rolling eyes in one of the castaway speeches, then I'm going to use it. If it's on camera, then I'm going to definitely include it in the edit. And that's a conscious editing decision from our side to include those eye rolls. And that's what the audience at home see. Was it that big on the island? Not necessarily, but I mean, if you have a two-hour tribal council and three eye rolls in that 2 hours, I'm going to possibly include all three in the edit, just because it gives a little bit more gravitas, and it works on the psyche of the castaways that are still in the game. And to be quite honest, Jeff was absolute gold in tribal council. He just did not stop. So I mean, the fact that you see his eye rolls and his comments that much is a testament at how much he actually did it in tribal council, which at the time was wonderful, and I think it brought some really interesting moments for the audience.
I want to kind of step off the island for a second if we can, and I want to talk about your reaction to the reaction kind of from the fan community, you know, international and, as you said, huge ratings. I know that our podcast, you know, in South Africa, it always charts really well, which I'm always so happy that there are local fans, you know, listening and trying to engage with the content of Survivor South Africa so extremely. So, you know, we don't really usually have a series director who is so tuned into the fan reaction. So I guess firstly, what was it like to see the kind of the global phenomenon that I really think Survivor South Africa did become? And also when you're reading into that, you know, reading Reddit or reading Twitter, does that carry any weight? Will you take that possibly in the future and take some ideas from that or take some reactions from that? Or are you like, this is Reddit, so we're not necessarily going to listen to that?
I do tap into Reddit, specifically into comments on Twitter, and I do take it. I don't make it personal, but I'm obviously open for ideas, and I do quite a lot of research, and if there are ideas that kind of pop out to me, or people kind of contact me on social media or whatever, to kind of go, that was cool, I didn't like that, and whatever, you know, I'll respond. For me, it's about first and foremost doing justice to the greatest game on earth. That's my job. I need to make the best Survivor show that I think we can put out there, and that for me is kind of the driving force. Would I want to watch this Survivor? Yes, I would. Would I be, as a fan, would I be satisfied with what I'm seeing on screen and how these guys are portrayed and play and the twists and the turns and the blind sides and the beauties? I mean, would that satisfy me as a fan? If I'm happy with that, yes, that then I'm putting it out there. With all the with the global community as it currently is sitting, specifically with International Survivor, there is so much happening, and you have to take people's opinions into consideration. You don't have to agree with it, but you have to take it into consideration. If somebody don't like a fire making challenge at Final Four, then you have to kind of make a plan and make a plan to not include that. And then you ask yourself, as a student of the game, fan of the game, do you like that? Do you prefer a vote nullifier over a Final Four challenge, a fire making challenge? And that, I think, is where I'm very blessed in terms of developing the show. And for me, then kind of feed into my own fandom. I mean, it sounds conceited, and it's not supposed to be, but for me, that's kind of, would I be happy to watch that? And on the other hand, as a television producer and a creative, would I be happy to put that out there for the audience to consume and criticize and praise? That is the most important thing for me, is that twofold thing. As a producer, am I happy with the creative that I'm putting out there? Am I happy with the quality of the product that I'm putting out there? And as a fan of the show, am I happy to watch this and be entertained?
Well, on that note, you know, I think that in your two seasons, you probably received one of the biggest reactions during what we like to call the incident. I know that, you know, there was a lot of fury, understandably so, online about, you know, I can't believe this, cancel Survivor SA, or they're condoning bullying.
I think a lot of people were saying cancel Survivor SA.
No, there was the squeaky wheels. Yeah, the squeaky wheels were there, but I think there was definitely a lot of understandable reaction from that. And I think, unfortunately, sort of like as a representation of the show, you sort of sometimes get the fall for some things that people might be doing on screen, even though, to your point, you're not necessarily pushing them in that direction. So I guess, you know, what was your reaction to the way that that came across, especially considering, like you said, you know, if you're sort of looking at from it from a fan perspective as well, how did you feel about the way the fans had such a big reaction to not only that, but some of these people like Rob and Steffi and Nicole, who, you know, from weeks then on out, people were not necessarily keen on because of that?
Yeah, I listened to Vince's exit interview this morning, spoiler alert, he specifically said to Rob that people need to be nice. People need to, you know, not. And social media is such a melting pot of personalities, and such an easy way to be mean. So, with the incident, the Mother Jaka incident, which is now canon, just hashtag saying. With that incident, it is once again. It's once again that moment of drama that you don't interfere with, and you cannot interfere with, because you are telling the story of these characters who are in this environment that is incredibly, incredibly difficult to be in. So, and I got my fair share of hate mail on Twitter, or messages, DMs on Twitter, about how dare we condone thingy, and I just blocked people. So, but it is one of those things. You have to. You can't now go, okay, what happened here? Let's sort this out, because what happens on screen with that story. So everybody's now angry at Jacques. How is everybody angry at Jacques? Everybody's angry at Jacques. No, what is the reason? So you have to show that to kind of move on with the narrative. And it is a narrative that is necessary. So, I'm all for kind of changing the narrative up and feeding into that, but it is what it is. It happened on screen, and that's my thing. If it didn't happen on camera, then it didn't happen, but it happened on camera, and we have to kind of show that. So that is the big thing that I need to kind of be wary of when we edit the show. So I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it absolutely does. And I mean, I, even looking back on it, I mean, it was a truly ugly moment, and I'm sure you agree with that. But like you said, it was so necessary. And like Shannon said before, what I love about the storytelling that you and your, you know, your seven dwarves do in the Bay is that it's just so authentic. I mean, we talk about sort of the warts and all edit of it all, and yeah, I mean, it doesn't necessarily show people in a heroic light or in a completely villainous light, because much like real life, people are complicated. You know, we saw Jacques do some pretty boneheaded things in the first few episodes, and he goes on to be the underdog hero by the end of the story. What I love about it is, and maybe it's because we also had so many episodes as well, we got to see these people's narratives really grow and change over time in both seasons that we've seen. And I just find that really cool, because it's a really great representation of the fact that these are people. They're not necessarily characters on television, and you show all the good bad decisions, all the good, bad qualities that they imbue. And so we get a pretty interesting picture as to who they are.
And my thing is, I am invested every week, 55 minutes a week that I spend watching Survivor. I want to know what these people go through. I want to know where they are. As an invested viewer, I want to know where everyone is at a point in the show, because I've invested my time, and I think that kind of frame of reference makes a hell of a difference in terms of how you tell the story, because you need to include everybody. Yes, even Tani Letisha, who is considered a goat to go to the end, you have to include her in the show. Otherwise, she will just kind of go away and be left in the lurch. So for me, that is important. It's kind of going, I have to tell everybody's story, not just the winner pick.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, you have to show, obviously, the incident. Like, it's the kind of thing where, like, it's sad that it happened, but can you imagine, like, coming off the show, doing the deep dives, and they're like, there was this thing that they didn't show? Like, that would have been a slap in the face. So, obviously, you know, it's sad that it happened, but this is, as you said, the culture that the players are creating, that we're viewing through this, like, you know, one-way mirror. And we have to, you know, that's what we were watching. Like, of course, we had to see that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And the big thing about that is that if you are going to tell somebody's story, you have to be, yes, there are moments that you don't show something because it's good for the narrative. It's good that you surprise the audience and yes, you absolutely do that because it's part of the storytelling process. But if your narrative is not what actually happened on the island, then it, as a viewer, I would feel cheated. And that's kind of how I kind of view it.
Yeah. I love the way you view the game, for sure, because I can see, like, your words flow right onto the product that I see and everything I appreciate about it.
Once the show airs, have you gotten any sort of comments from castaways as to, I mean, it does seem like, I mean, every person that we've talked to has had nothing but positive words to say about you, understandably so. Has anyone come to you and been like, why did you show that? Like, how am I coming across?
I want to say no. I spoke to Nicole at the finale, and I went up to her and I said to her, I want to say sorry to you, but I'm not going to say sorry to you. And she said, why would you want to say sorry to me? Because, and I kind of went, because of the edit that you got. And she went, no, that is what happened on the island. So why would you apologize for that? And that is amazing and also it's wonderful to see that she has completely and utterly gone to that space where she said what happened on the island because and it was a true representation of what actually happened. So that indication and specifically that interaction with Nicole really warmed my heart. I mean, the fact that she said, What happened? I was that person on the island, and it was a true representation. So don't apologize. So I didn't.
No, I'm sure that's that's great, because I'm assuming, like, I mean, I don't know, if I was a showrunner and I would be making these editing decisions, I'm sure I would constantly have in the back of my head the, you know, Dan Foley trying to call out the edit during the Survivor Worlds Apart finale just in my head in terms of wanting to tell the story of these castaways. But I think it speaks to both your editing and your casting. And I agree that Nicole's been a great sport about all of this that's been coming, you know, both from the show and from the community as well. But I think it speaks to your cast that they're like, yeah, that's exactly what happened. And it showed me as a person, for better or for worse.
Yeah. I mean, there were omissions, obviously, and stuff that we didn't show that was supposed to be on the show. It's minor stuff and stuff that didn't actually make it into the show that you saw on the secret scenes and the amount of secret scenes that we did put out this season was insane because there was so much good content that happened and it just didn't make it into the episode, but it made it onto the website and people actually saw it. So it's one of those things. It also speaks to the great cast that we had this season. And we had a phenomenal cast. I mean, right through everybody. I'm honest about that. It was amazing. And to see them kind of just get into it and play with it, it's great.
Yeah, LaRue, I have so many, like, I could talk to you about Survivor, I think, for hours. I have a question that you said some of the questions I asked before were difficult, and this is one you definitely won't be able to answer. What is your favorite sponsor?
Shannon, you have to go there, hey?
It's definitely Wiseworth. How could it not be?
It's, look, the sponsors are the guys who actually kind of make the show happen. So I was very impressed with all of them. They all came to the party, specifically with the finale. I went to the Edge of Extinction. I told you guys I went to the Edge of Extinction finale in May, and that's a whole different story. But anyway, and learned a lot of lessons there. And the one thing that I did learn was that they bring back these Survivor challenges that you can play before the show starts. I think when was it? Season 32, 33. Jeff starts outside at the finale, and he says, and Andrea is playing a challenge, and they say, come in, they're playing outside. And so we set that up with the finale this season. And then you have these, all of these kind of wonderful things that happen to you, and you kind of go, oh my word, this is actually happening.
I mean, it must all be incredible to be a Survivor fan who makes Survivor, but like, is there any moment or couple of moments that stand out to you where you were just like, so proud, or like a real pinch me moment? Is it those finales where like you've really created this thing that people are hyped about, like in that lifetime with a real audience? Or like, yeah, what kind of moments do you look back on as just like, this is insane?
I think for me, the big thing with producing the show is that moment where you kind of go live for the finale and the music plays and you're in the control room and you have that moment when Nico turns around and it's that classic, everybody gets up and starts clapping hands and you kind of go, okay, so we're live and then you kind of go, okay, we are live. This is like the end of it. And your heart breaks at the same time because, you can't announce season 8 at the end of the show, but it's also such a great moment because you are presenting the winner of the season, and it is spectacular to have everybody there and everybody's looking great and the set's looking amazing and you kind of realize we kind of did this and that kind of feeling is ridiculous. I can't explain it. It's like a euphoria that you go into it's over so quickly because things just happen. It's one after the other. I mean, I to this day, I'm so sad that we didn't get to speak to Mike V on the finale, but we just ran out of time. We had like inserts and we had a funny montage. I mean, there's some really cool stuff that we cut that we had to cut out of the live broadcast because we just ran out of time. And it's not like the castaways took their time answering questions. It's just, things happen so quickly and then it's done. And then you walk out and people just congratulate you and all that type of stuff. But, you know, it's, I think the finale is probably the culmination of all the work that you've put in and the proudest moment that you could have, because, you know, your kid's out there and it's thriving and it's just, you know, graduated and it's going to have a wonderful future. So yeah, very proud to kind of have that moment.
Yeah, it's like I would compare it to, like, you spend 39 days in your case, a month and a half plus 39 days working on a painting, and the finale is you unveiling the finalized painting in the gallery, and you have this big opening where everyone congratulates you for it, and then, like, the fleeting euphoria is gone, but you're always going to have that picture hanging that represents you know, what you worked on in frame, every sort of, you know, color in it, how it fills in the picture entirely. And it's going to be there for everyone to enjoy no matter when they decide to check it out.
Yeah, that's a very good description. And I think we put out two great paintings this with the season 6 and 7.
I agree. One of them has Tom screaming like a dinosaur in it.
and using his shell phone, Tom.
He's not an amateur.
Because he's not an amateur. No, it was. It's and it's that positivity of I need to do another painting. So, you know, I'm gonna prep the canvas so long, just so that the canvas is there, so that when we can start painting, we are going to make another beautiful painting. And that's the exciting part for me, and also the positive part for me, because you have to put it out in the universe to kind of have it come back. And I'm channeling Rob Bentley again.
And now a quick break to hear from our sponsors.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we are back. We have talked so much about Survivor in the last couple of hours. We do still have a couple of questions from the listeners that we didn't quite get to, which I'd love to ask. Jason Gates, who is my brother slash intern, who was so pumped about this interview, by the way, he just, like, sat across the dinner table from me, just, like, throwing questions for me. I think he's probably, like, listening at the door right now. But he asks, what twist from US Survivor and Australian Survivor will never make it on South African Survivor while you're at the helm? I think I know Final Four fire making seems like pretty
similar. Yeah, Final Four fire making. I love Jason's questions anyway. All 15 of them that popped up.
He was pumped up.
No, he's really excited. I saw this and I started thinking about it. As a fan, I really don't like Final Four fire making. I'm trying to think now.
Would you ever about Redemption Island before. Would you ever do, like, Redemption Island, Edge of Extinction, bring back players who had been eliminated?
No, Edge of Extinction, no. Redemption Island, I feel that's intrinsically, for me as a fan, if your torch is snuffed, you are out. You are out of the game, and it doesn't feel right for me to then bring you back. What happened in season one of Survivor SA way back is that they had Dead Man's Island. So from final eight to final four, they had players go to Dead Man's Island after they were voted out. And then at final four, they brought back those players, which is kind of it's a take on Edge of Extinction. And this is 2006. So then they brought back those players and they had to compete against the players that were still in the game. One of the players who were on Dead Man's Island actually won that season. So it doesn't sit well with me. I did not, although I love the characters of Edge of Extinction, I love my fellow Gryffindor, Rick Devons, who is one of my favorite human beings on the planet. And I love David Wright, who is now working on Star Trek Lower Decks, which I'm geeking out about so badly. Mike, I know you too. But for me, I love the characters of Edge of Extinction, but I didn't like the format twist on that. I don't think we are there yet with an Island of the Idols. I don't know who I'd bring back. Maybe Ashley Hayden, but you know, I don't think she'd come back. And we're not there yet. We're not there yet for Island of the Idols, so I don't think that would work for us. Australian Survivor, I didn't like the go and look for an idol in the middle of the night, or you get chosen to go and win a reward for your tribe and then go and out in the swamp to go and find an idol. I didn't like that twist. That's just off the top of my head. Those are the things that I wouldn't bring into Survivor SA.
A lot of people asked, and I don't even have the names right because there were so many, mixed international seasons. When are we going toe-to-toe? South Africa versus Australia. I will use that season to decide my citizenship.
Hey, you know what? Don't cut US short out either, okay? I've heard, I think South Africa, if we did three more tribes of seven, South Africa versus US,
New Zealand
versus Australia.
If
Matt Chisholm does a good job in Host versus Heroes, then I think they could consider New Zealand.
I would love to do a season like that. It's one of the iterations that is in my documents folder. I would love to do something like that, but there is an issue with rights, which I can't actually discuss. But the format rights for a territory is specifically for that territory, so that kind of speaks into players. Yes, perhaps, but to have like a mixed season with Australia and New Zealand and South Africa kind of playing against each other, I don't know if it's viable in terms of the format. That's kind of all I can say about it. So it's a wonderful idea, and I wish I could do it because I've already cast it in my head. I know exactly who I want.
Well, you know, how about this, LaRue? You talk to me offline. I'll put together a brand steal. We'll do some sort of podcast simulation, maybe, if there's enough.
That'd be amazing. Yeah, no, absolutely.
But you could make Nicola's dreams come true. You could do a mini host season, and whichever host wins gets to host the international season.
Yeah, you could kind of do like what they did with like Cornet and Mark on Champions, of like have them do separate challenges, like have them tackle each other in the mud, and then whoever wins gets to host that night's tribal council.
That would be incredible. I mean, can you imagine the Puglia and Chisholm and Pinaggio kind of fighting in the mud, and then that decides who hosts that evening's tribal council? That would be cool. That would be very cool.
Jonathan just like comes to tribal council, like wipes some mud off his brow and is like, "All right, I won tonight." What's happening today? I love that idea. That makes it even better.
Yeah, hey, the tribe captains or the country captains, amazing. The country. Oh man, complete brand steal on that one. I'm with you, Mike.
Well, we really did get through most of the questions in talking about this for over 2 hours. Mike, did you have? Because as I said, we could really talk about Survivor for days. I truly believe. Yeah. Did you have anything else that was really pressing, Mike?
No, I mean, this was so valuable in so many ways. And I'm sure once we get off the line here, I'm going to have a million more questions. And hopefully that opens up another possibility of, you know, talking with you down the line, because there will be a season 8 at some point talking with you about that. But I mean, I cannot be thankful enough, LaRue, for not only everything you do, but supporting us as well. You know, Shannon and I started doing Survivor SA coverage after we to Shannon's point, had heard the acclaim over the first couple of episodes, and we're like, yeah, let's start podcasting about it. Never in our wildest dreams would we think that we not only, you know, get feedback from one of the big heads behind Survivor SA, but get to speak with him and let alone get to interview him. It really has been fantastic. And I cannot speak highly enough about how much as a Survivor fan, I have supremely enjoyed what you put out here the past 2 years. And I'm looking forward to so many more paintings to come.
Thank you very much, Mike. Yeah, I really appreciate what you two have done for the show with the international audience. It really is amazing to know that you are so invested in it. I'm very, 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 very thankful.
Yeah, like I think back to the beginning of Philippines and I was hearing all these rumblings, incredible premiere, they went to Rocks. It's like, you have to cover it. It's like, all right, well, I've done fewer than, you know, probably at the time, like 5 podcasts in my life. So I don't know how I'm going to cover 2 seasons right now. So I'm like, hey, well, we'll do intermittent coverage. So we did, like, you know, after episode 4, then after episode 7, and then after episode 7, Tevin, that huge Tevin blindside, Mike's like, you know what, I'd be okay doing every week. I'm like, oh, we're doing every week. Like, it was just, like, impossible at that point not to talk about it every week. And we haven't missed an episode since. And, like, I'm so grateful for that. I'm so happy to be a part of this. I really right now have a craving to just go binge Philippines again right now. Like, yeah. Such an amazing season. Both seasons just... so worth it. And the way that the international community and the local community, the way that Survivor fans in general have engaged with the show, like, it warms my heart because it's so worth it. Like, it's such a good product that I get to be a part of it in some capacity and talk about it every week. Like, it's honestly a gift. And I truly believe you're the best thing in Survivor right now. You should be in the US show, but I don't want you to not be making the Survivor South Africa. But, like, genuinely, they should be hiring you because the way you view the game and the way that you are a fan and you bring that to it, like, it, I agree with it completely, which I love. And I honestly think that US Survivor would be better for hiring you. But until that happens, like, please, please, season 8, when, not if, it's happening.
When, not if. Yeah, thank you, Shannon. That's very kind of you. I actually said to Hundry the other day that, you know, if we don't hear soon, then I'm going to phone up Jesse Jensen from US Survivor, and I'm going to say to him, listen, do you have a spot for me on your dream team? Because, you know, I want to come and, you know, just come and see how you guys do things. It really is such a pleasure talking to you guys and geeking out about Survivor is one of my favorite things to do. Yeah, and it's really been such a pleasure having this conversation with you now. So thank you very much for having me on the show. And yeah, I look forward to chatting with you again on some other shows. I mean,
yeah.
I must tell you this story before we go. After season 1 started in South Africa, Hundry was working for Mnet at the time, and so I got in touch with Mnet's publicity department, and I said to them, listen, it's 2006, and I said to them, listen, can I do a podcast on Survivor? So I actually did season 1 and 2 of Survivor. It was called the Unofficial Survivor SA Podcast, and it was my friend Frick and I who were just chatting Survivor season 1 and 2. It kind of feels full circle coming back to you guys, back to podcast again, essentially.
Oh my God, you invented the Survivor podcast.
No. Rob was already on it. I got the idea from him, so it. That's where we started. So
super fan. It's crazy. Mike, one day we're going to be creating Survivor and you can be the evil genius and I'll be the angel. Creative. I feel like you and Hundry are like angel and devil. So that's how I'm kind of looking at it.
Oh, thank you. Well, I hope you're intrigued for a season full of Darrows, because that's what I'm casting.
Listen.
Not even people like Darrow, just Darrow cloned 18 times.
Are you not getting the Darrow vibe edit from of Dean on Island of the Idols?
Yeah. I brought that up in the beginning this week.
Really?
Dean was totally due for the week last week. Yeah. It made me so, like, happy.
Dean is so getting the Darrow edit on Island of Idols.
No one can be Darrow. Like, Dean, he screwed up this week, but he can't be Darrow.
Well, you can't beat the RAW, so yeah, absolutely. Oh, guys, it's been such a pleasure having a chat with you.
It's been so good. Yeah, definitely. Everyone, hashtag when, not if, hashtag Survivor SA. LaRue, where can people find you on social media? As we said, you know, you're on Twitter and Instagram. Where can people check out what you're doing?
At LaRuberta on Twitter and Instagram. And yeah, it's mostly pictures of me running whilst listening to you guys. So, and that is basically where I am on the grams and the Twitter and whatever. So, if you want to follow.
All right. Well, Mike, it's been so long. I don't even know what you're up to. I actually do. But what? Tell the listeners what you're doing currently in the podcast.
I was gonna say, I'm up to the usual stuff. Obviously, the B&B every week, also doing Exit Press for Parade.com with this really, really great cast of Survivor Island of the Idols. You know, I it's so interesting hearing about the casting process from you, LaRue, because getting to talk with Jeff about it and Matt preseason, I very much got that an impression from this cast as well. So it's been a lot of, you know, unfortunate killing our darlings every week just because I love this cast so much, but it's been so much fun to talk with them. And of course, as LaRue so nicely put before, I'm going down the hatch with Josh Wigler every week, going episode by episode through Lost. This week we are tackling Raised by Another. We're almost halfway through season one, which is crazy, but I'm so excited to get to do this with Josh and to have great feedback from listeners like you, LaRue. It's been amazing to get to you know, have everyone in on the experience. So those are the major two big projects that I've been working on.
Yeah, well,
you really know, enjoying the podcast.
Yes, and I'm enjoying it too, now that I've caught up on Lost in the last 2 weeks. Mike and I have decided that this podcast officially transitions us from post-season Survivor South Africa coverage to what is technically off-season Survivor South Africa coverage, because it's been like over a month. But I hope everyone checked out the deep dives. We did a lot of deep dives, obviously, for Island of Secrets and Australian Survivor. I am going to be starting my new US Survivor podcast this week. If anyone checked out the voicemails for episode 2 with Rob Sestanino that I did, I announced that I'm going to be doing US Survivor coverage with international Survivor guests. So we're going to get definitely, you know, a bunch of these Survivor South Africa contestants on. I've decided to call it Survivor Global. So it's SG with SG, because I'm losing my name, but not my initials, when I get married in a couple of months. And episode 4 will be my first recap with the great Pia Miranda. So that's going to be amazing. I hope everyone will check that out. Subscribe to the International Survivor Wrap Ups feed if you somehow haven't already, because it'll be there. It'll be at Reality TV Wrap Ups, and it's going to be in the RHAP Survivor feed, where like Mike's B&B is, for example. So, you know, two birds with one stone there. So definitely subscribe to all of that. But LaRue, this has just been such a delight. I feel like I have so much insight. I don't even know how to decompress from it all. Like every answer, I feel like I learned so much. So thank you so much. This was worth the year it took us to organize it. And it was just amazing. Yeah.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. And it was such a blast. I really, really appreciate the love that you guys have shown to the show. And really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's only our pleasure. Like, we truly, genuinely, as you can tell, do love Survivor South Africa. So hashtag we're not if, because we will be definitely seeing you guys for season 8. But until then, thank you so much again, LaRue. Thanks to Mike, as always. Thanks to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. And we will see you next time. Bye.